Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Business news, views, and insights from across the globe.
Welcome everyone to Hidden Growth Champions, our podcast series. Now in its third season, we're giving quite a bit of attention to industries in transition. And when we speak about transition, we cannot but speak about the energy transition. It's a topic that's received quite a bit of attention on our podcast, and we've had some wonderful guests over the last few months in particular that have given you insights into the nature of the transition and the areas and the geographies in which it is most pronounced. And it's such a pleasure to welcome into our studio today Olivia Drucker. Olivia, thank you for making time for us. Thank you for taking away from your busy schedule. You've been working alongside with and on the energy transition in many countries, but perhaps a quick introduction from yourself, and I'm sure it'll be a fascinating discussion as we learn from your experience and the way you have seen the energy transition take shape and how it affects various players in the ecosystem, particularly the utilities. So much more to talk about that, but an introduction from your side first.
Yes, thank you so much, Sarah. My name is Olivier Drucke. I'm half German, half French. 55 years old. I studied economics, business management in the late 80s, and I'm working in the German, European, worldwide energy transition since more than 30 years. Actually, I entered the solar industry in 1990, 1st of January 1990, and there I went on an adventure with concentrated solar power systems, the large mirror solar power plants, you know, from deserts, and building integrated photovoltaic. So that got me the solar virus in my very young professional career. And I stayed with the industries since then, working on many different sectors. Mainly, I was working for companies, manufacturing companies, distribution companies. I also had some responsibilities in the associative world. I was president of the European Solar Thermal Heat Federation in Brussels. And 12 years ago, I decided to work as an independent consultant. And since then, I'm working now with a focus on Africa and the Middle East on solar market development topics that are, well, very fashionable also nowadays in Africa and more also in the Arab world. So I'm very much involved in developing the right framework conditions for market development, and I'm working basically for development organizations, for banks, for companies, and for associations. That's in a nutshell.
That's fantastic, Olivia. Thank you for that. I wanted to kind of dive in. There's so much for us to talk about, but one cannot talk about the transition and the transition of utilities in particular without taking cognizance of the environment and how the environment itself is changing, reshaping. And certainly when we think about the post-COVID environment and what the pandemic has taught us, there's much in the environment that's changing. The words volatility come to mind, the words disruption, and the geopolitical changes and shifts that keep on taking place and have an impact on the energy transition. Risk is another word that comes to mind, as well as opportunity. So perhaps for our listeners, if we had to take a little bit of a step back and ask, what is really happening in the environment that we have to take account of when we start to think about the shifting role of utilities and how the energy transition is playing out? It's such a fascinating field, and I'd love your thoughts, having worked in so many different markets and seeing the transition over a longer period of time. What is it particular about the current context, the current environment, that we just need to keep in mind?
Yes, I think the current context, the larger context, or the overarching context where utilities have to move today, is the climate change challenge and the global policies adopted to tackle this climate change. Whatever people personally may think about climate change and its acuteness and all of that, the global policymakers and global industries have understood the challenge and are really tackling these topics. And the last IPCC report that just came out, I think in August last year, August 21, quite a complex document, but in a nutshell, it was saying that from all the scenarios they were analyzing, the only viable scenario is called SSP1. And this SSP1 scenario recommends strongly to move from a quantitative growth economic model to one of qualitative growth and well-being, and also one where social inequalities are systematically reduced. Now, that is not necessarily what we have been seeing in the last 10, 15 years, because the economic model we are in is still acting out as it has been developing in the last years, and it is quite difficult to change the paradigm of this economic model. However, the utilities and the power and energy sector is very much tangled by this climate policies, because the renewable energies, the often decentralized renewable energies, paves the way to exactly the required transition from quantitative growth to qualitative growth. And if centralized utilities, they can be part of these market dynamics if they adapt their culture by diversifying into innovative, decentralized approach and business models. It's not to say that all of energy will be decentralized in the future, but a major share of the market will be developed through decentralized approaches, and utilities need to be part of that new game. That's, I would say, for the very rough context. And then you have, in this paradigm change, two, three more vectors that are very important and shaping the challenges of utilities. That's the evolution of the energy ecosystem. There we talk about internationalization. You have, for example, European companies investing everywhere in the world in several projects, and you have American companies, Chinese companies doing the same. You have this decentralization, which I mentioned already, and you have also the challenge of digitalization. So that's about the evolution of the energy ecosystem. The second major trigger here is also how the energy consumers change. They have a tendency to morph from simple consumers into prosumers or even competitors to the utilities. And then the third part is the utility mindset or culture. What mindsets and management styles are needed to adapt to the new market realities? That's a little maybe the context in which these challenges are appearing to utilities.
Olivia, when I think about the transition or the opportunity to transition for utilities, I can't but think of other industries that have gone through a similar transition. I can't but think of, for example, telecommunications firms that have moved from a very centralized one-way model into a much richer ecosystem of various players. There are a number of industries that one can think of that could give us insights into what utilities might already be facing and what they might be facing and the intensity of that change that they'll be facing in the years to come. So kind of with that in mind, and you've already kind of opened the discussion for us to speak about mindsets and perspectives and the way in which one sees the opportunity or the risk, the way in which one therefore responds and participates in shaping the transition or not, or being a watcher of it, a recipient of it. Just give us a bit of a sense of, you know, what do you see as the biggest challenge is centralized utility model and the various utilities that play in that model will be facing from a mindset, from a leadership perspective, from a perspective of how they think about the transition and therefore what they see.
Talking about this on the example of the African, on what's happening on the African continent, may be a little difficult because the energy transition has more or less just begun there to different degrees in varying countries, but still it's at the beginning. To answer your question, I'd like to look a little more on the European continent, where these utilities had been facing the rise of renewable energies, mainly solar and wind, on the power sector. The utilities have seen this market develop in the last, in Germany, it started 30 years ago, and it really got dynamic in the turn of the millenary around 2000, when there was also a change in government, and we had a socialist, ecologic government. And obviously, they really started to shape the energy transition proactively. And it was 20 years ago when the big German utilities named RWE or E.ON, Preußen Elektra, different big regional or over-regional utilities, big companies, stock market, listed in the stock markets and stuff. And they were, it's a little like with Gandhi, you know, first they heard about solar, they said, that's never going to happen. So first they laughed at us, they ridiculed us. Then they noticed that it's a billion euro market. Suddenly, well, they took us very, very serious. And ultimately, they noticed that they are losing traction and that they're losing clients. And that is exactly, I think, the important point. The utilities who were selling their centralized, often fossil fuel-based or nuclear-based power, they were also increasing the tariffs. They had kind of a monopolies. They were increasing the tariffs. And more German customers, consumers, had the ecologic glasses on and also seeing that the tariffs were increasing constantly. And from this point, at this point, 20 years ago, solar energy was already relatively well established with different policies. And there, then also the solar sector got enormous traction, not only from final customers, households, but also from companies and also from big project developers who would make very big utility scale systems, not belonging to the utilities, but developed by private companies, independent private companies. And this is when the utilities really saw their market shares contracting, and they saw also their stock market value, in fact, dwindling significantly, in some cases with losses of stock values of 90% for the big players. And that was certainly the last moment when the shareholders said, what are you doing there? Since 10 years, we have a solar revolution and you are still stuck with your old technologies. You're losing your clients. Your stock market valuation is zero. Why should we stay with you? And this was the wake-up call for them. And since 10 years, they are reacting. Maybe explain a little later how they react, but that was the wake-up call for the European utilities, having watched the development, the dynamics since 10 years and only waking up in the 15th year to the challenge.
Livia, you, in one of our earlier conversations, you've used a phrase that we like to refer to a lot, and that is kind of management of the future, management of potentialities, not having one view of the future, but multiple possibilities in which we start to play into, play towards. I was remembering a conversation with Amy Webb, a well-known futurist, where she speaks about two types of organizations, the one who actively participate in creating the future and the ones who watch, and some of the consequences about the ones who watch. So perhaps tell us a little bit about when we speak about management of the future, and I know you've used inverted commas in there, what do you see organizations that manage proactively and well into the future do that is different? How did they anticipate some of those medium and long-term effects and are able to chart a more prosperous path into the future? Because I'm very conscious that by not doing that, the kind of loss of valuation that we've seen is very pronounced and sometimes very difficult, if not impossible, to recover from.
Utilities, typical power utilities that come from a certain country or region, we see that they have, it's not so easy for them to venture into Africa. We have seen companies like E.ON, for example, venturing in off-grid electrification projects, making little spin-off companies and trying to develop that market. That's not easy. And often they do not succeed because at home they do not have the risk culture also for projects, mini-grid projects in Africa. That's too far away from them. But I have a positive example, one or two, comes to my mind, the French oil company Total, who you certainly know. And they have been active, for example, historically in Africa because of the colonial past. They have been very active in Africa, Sub-Sahara and North Africa. And already since 20, 25 years, also involved in solar energy. They are not a typical utility. They are rather, fossil energy trader and processor and this type of things. But still, it's one of the big old established energy companies. And they are active. Also, another company, French also, is Engie. That's the former Gaz de France, Engie called today. And they are also very active internationally. You do not see so many European companies everywhere. There are a lot. They're very visible in Africa. And they are now very successful and they have a good market share. They are making pioneering market developments in Africa, for example, because they have been there since always. And since 20, 25 years, they have been systematically, as a test, often also in test projects, they have been developing slowly but continuously. They have been developing, for example, solar projects. And nowadays, they are a big and important market actor there.
It's interesting that you raise ENGIE. We've had the opportunity of speaking to one of their senior execs a few weeks back, and he spoke in very similar terms to what you're describing now about that persistence, about developing into pioneering areas over a longer period of time. They play for the long term. They participate with the long term in mind. They know that in the short term, they're going to make some mistakes. They know that sometimes it's two steps forward and one step back. But one of the things that he attributed their success to was specifically that consistency, that seeing of value, seeing that the broader positive impact that brings, whether we speak about African markets or other territories that they're involved in. He attributed a lot of it to their consistent approach.
And through their African long-term history, they also have a good feeling for opportunity risk in Africa, so they can drive business there. I would say a German utility company that has no experience in Africa is going, well, to have to go through a learning curve, and they will lose money at the beginning because they don't know how to make these projects also successful. It's not so easy to make a project successful in Africa. It's more difficult than in Europe. Yeah.
Now, one of the models that you've referred to is one of a range of possibilities for utilities to participate in this growing part of the market, to participate meaningfully in the transition, is not just to challenge the current business models and make tweaks to those, but to participate more fully through expanded means, through corporate venturing, for example, through making more than simply financial investments in companies, teams, projects, whether microgrids or otherwise, whether decentralized, that give them both a foothold in as well as the learnings to participate more fully in that part of the market. Now, that in itself, the corporate venturing challenge for utilities can be quite substantial because we're moving from simply, you know, early stage involvement through accelerators of various types, early stage kind of seed type investments into something that's more substantive. It starts to have a much broader and a deeper impact on the organization, the way you allocate capital, the way you build a corporate portfolio, the way you value that portfolio versus, you know, your current core utility type business. Maybe talk us a little bit through what you've seen or how utilities utilize these new models, these new operating models to shift, to participate more fully in that part of the market.
Well, in Germany or in Europe, what they do, those big established utilities like RWE or Vattenfall, how they call their four or five big companies, what they do is they very often do not have such a good image with the customers because of this history of high tariffs and a fossil base and nuclear power. So the image of these companies is not especially good. So what they very often do is that they create new brands, sometimes in cooperation also with a green pioneer company that they just buy up. But what they will generally do is buy up well-established green brands established by pioneer solar companies, for example, or just create new distribution brands where they invest a lot of money, by the way, a lot of marketing budgets going into it. They're doing this since 10 years. This is as a reaction to the fall of their share of their stock market valuations. This is really the wake-up call. Then they start to react and to develop those new market segments by buying up or by rebranding. That's basically, and are they successful with it? I think they are not unsuccessful, but they are not growing as fast as they would have hoped. They lost some terrain and they have difficulties catching it up and regaining those lost client segments. So it's a struggle for them. And they have not managed to build back, to raise back their company valuations. They are still worth less than 10 years ago. For Africa, well, the whole development is much delayed, I would say, by 10 to 20 years. And in Africa, most utilities, and there, let me be a little blunt, and I don't want to generalize, but Generally speaking, the utilities in Africa and in the Arab world are really state monopolies. They come from a state monopoly culture, and they are still in this, most of them are still in this perspective. Some are changing. I give you the example, for example, of the Tunisian utility called STEG, STEG. And STEG is on board with the government to develop the solar sector. Large plants, medium-sized plants, they are on board with it in principle. But in practice, they have difficulties. They have created a green spin-off company. And this spin-off company lacks also, is not big enough, and it lacks also the culture for supporting these decentralized market segments and the new companies that come in, which the stack is viewing as a potential competitor. So there are here, there is not a clear culture. There is antagonism inside the societies. So there's no clear strategy. And basically what's happening is that this utility is currently still delaying, postponing the development of said solar market segments. So they're delaying and they're hampering a little the process, which is not in line with the strategic development, sustainable development goals, and puts pressure also in energy politics in the country. Did I answer the question a bit?
No, certainly, and it kind of raises for me a particular aspect of corporate venturing, and particularly when I think about it from an African perspective or with an African context to it, and that is the concentration of capabilities and skills. The concentration of capital is often more so in African markets, whether they are state-owned enterprises or recently privatized or partly privatized, but still operate within the same mindset and culture of a peristatal. And in all of these cases,
and they're often not profitable. Huh? They're often, in fact, they're standing on their own, they would be bankrupt very often.
Exactly. And when that happens, one of the things that really comes to mind for me is the ability to partner and therefore to operate at greater speed. Because even for these concentrations of capabilities and skills, we often find that the organization, the utility, can't do everything themselves. Now they need to operate well beyond the generation space. Now they need to be able to apply new digital services as nimbly as other sectors of the economy had more of an opportunity to do over a longer period of time. Suddenly they don't have the networks to leverage as quickly. So the ability to bring partners in and to leverage partners to increase speed and to have greater access to some of these capabilities really makes one think more broadly about corporate venturing, makes us think more broadly about innovation that's different to the traditional form of innovation within those large organizations.
Well, maybe we could bring this to the point by asking the question, what exactly does a utility mindset shift have to look like to be successful in the future? And I think it would begin with viewing competitive threats as opportunities and potential competitors as potential partners. And it also continues with embracing the multidimensional paradigm shift I explained above, as proactively as their corporate culture allows. In fact, the degree to which utilities decide to embrace new partnerships will be one of the primary benchmarks of their future success and longevity. So what you just said, this cooperation culture, because utilities cannot do everything themselves, there are new energy infrastructures, they have to partner with different actors. For example, in Africa, the utilities will partner with the telecom companies concerning the payments of sold solar home systems or consumption of a solar mini grid. So very often utilities are, for example, going to collaborate with telecom companies. But there are much more that utilities could do. And you cited the important keyword, corporate venturing. These companies still have generally access to capital, be it their own or access to public budgets. Very often public budgets get deficitary, by the way, because of losses that are occurring in the energy sector. But those companies who have access to capital and to funds in their own countries should basically develop the new market segments by making corporate spin-offs by letting, often also the problem is a cultural one, the management in these established formerly or still monopolistic companies is often, well, administrative ivory tower atmosphere, not very flexible and especially not very customer oriented. And therefore, there is also a new generation of competent managers, male, female, that need to enter these organizations. It's not so easy because very often these organizations are also staffed through contacts and here and there a little nepotism. Not necessarily the best people getting into the into top positions. Not the most competent necessarily. So there would have to be a change here and then do everything to introduce entrepreneurship mentality into these organizations. Now, you cannot enter a new entrepreneurial mindset department into such a utility company. But what you can do spin-offs. You can create separate corporate startups. You can make venture capital fund, invest in startups. You can make strategic partnerships. You can generate, you can create an incubator. And a utility can create an incubator with the topic, with different solar, wind, whatever topics, or engage into innovation project with international development organizations. There's many such projects, by the way. Often development organization partner also support utilities to move into a new business segment. So to put it in one sentence, the entrepreneurship mentality is something that is gaining foot in the European utilities clearly doing so, and this gaining foot of entrepreneurial mindset needs to happen also in Africa. Mm. And I have a question for you. Eskom is one of the big African utilities in South Africa.
Yes.
And they are facing this challenge also since 20 years, and they're doing solar also selectively since 20 years. How can you say in a nutshell how they react to the transition challenge?
Yeah, it's an ongoing challenge. And if I had to use a very similar frame of reference as you've introduced in today's discussion, the mindset shift is the most troublesome one, is the most challenging one. Because without that mindset shift, what happens is one looks at the opportunities, and there are multiple opportunities for solar developments in South as well as in Southern Africa. One of the best, geographically, one of the best resources for solar energy generation lies in this area. It was, in fact, the mindset that was most difficult for them to shift. They had certainly capabilities they could bring to the table and create corporate venturing centers, create corporate venturing initiatives, invest in startups, but they found it very challenging. And in fact, their track record in that area is anything but impressive if you look at it over a 10, 20-year life cycle. The day-to-day management of the utility, which became more difficult, more onerous, and without the ability to properly spin off that area, without the ability to create corporate venturing that can stand on its own and can grow the portfolio in this area of the market, what happened is the day-to-day, as it becomes more challenging, as it becomes more complex, has taken over management's attention. And when that happens, it becomes even more difficult to shift the mindset.
You're talking about a kind of civil war inside or mentality war inside the utility. Are you talking about that?
Exactly. And it doesn't start off that way. If I think of some of our discussions 8 years ago, it was more subtle. It was kind of more weaved into the process of approving investments, of allowing private sector players to participate, how quickly PPAs were put in place, et cetera, et cetera. But it's become more pronounced and unfortunately more negative over the past couple of years. So I guess in a way, what we're seeing here is organizations, and we use now South Africa as an example, but I see it all over the world, and we've been working with energy sector companies in multiple geographies. There's a stage at which your aristocracy, your model has become somewhat fixed, not as responsive, politically more challenging, where that starts to slip down that slippery slope into organizations that are more pronouncedly ineffective, that find it more challenging to respond to the energy transition. And when you're on that side of the curve, you're no longer not as innovative as you should be. You're no longer just not creating the kind of corporate ventures that you should. In fact, your day-to-day reality becomes so challenging that
crisis management.
Exactly. Your ability to move, to step out of it requires what one of my mentors many, many years back spoke about in one word, we described it as surgery. Now, he was talking not just about the energy sector, he was talking about utilities and peristatals in you know, much more broadly. But that word surgery kind of stayed in my mind when he spoke about that, when it's no longer, let's just put a plan together, or let's give additional attention to an innovative part of the business. It really requires much greater focus and attention. It requires a recognition of sometimes how the slippery that slope can become or already is. Do we need to get to a stage of stranded assets before we recognize that? Do we need to get to a stage where international commitments are being withheld? Do we get to a stage where we can't participate in regional trading of electricity because we ended up in kind of crisis management of the day-to-day? And that really, for me, is one of the key messages out of today's discussion, is that timing actually matters here. Recognizing early enough when we are not participating effectively, productively in an energy transition can lead to very significant consequences, not just down the road, 10, 20 years down the road, but in fact, from a value perspective and ultimately from a sustainability of the business, they are much closer than we think. And that's a real message for utilities, isn't it?
You know, there's one thing I would say also. These big utilities, they have, and I would say, a culture of administering a centralized monopoly. And they often were managing, or they are often managing also from quarter to quarter, from year to year, because the state budget is also very often tied to it. So it's a short-term management, basically. But the challenge that they are confronted with requires strategic thinking and positioning. And honestly, the German utilities, they just displayed that they had a very one-sided strategic thinking. They did not understand the challenges, and the result was the dwindling stock market valuation. Yeah, so it's not because a company is a big, old, established multinational that it is able to think strategically. That's one thing. And the utility culture, let me say also one sentence. I even read it because preparing our call, I wrote this down. I think the utilities need to move away from short-term profitability thinking anchored in management of the present, crisis management, towards an anticipative medium long-term thinking anchored in of management of the future and of opportunities. That's strategic management, and that is what many of these utilities still do not have, did not develop enough. That's my vision on it.
This is great. I mean, this is so relevant, you know, across geographies and across whichever base load technology and architecture utilities have chosen. Maybe just a last question, Olivia. I'm conscious we're getting to the top of the hour, and this is such a fascinating conversation. But as we respectively work within the energy sector, we do come across cases where utilities have made the shift. We come across and work with leaders who inspired change in their organization, who inspired people to be anticipatory, who inspired people to think about the future as a set of possibilities and to develop the skills to navigate towards that. You know, we find people who were able to influence and move and change the capital allocation process, the budgeting process, into a state that is more conducive for this kind of transition. So if I had to ask you perhaps in closing, when you think about those leaders, when you think about those individuals who have made the shift, who stopped their utility from that slippery slope, what do you think they have done most remarkably well? What have they done that sticks in your mind as that more than anything else has made the difference? The rest was tactics. The rest was good planning, good execution, accountability management. All these things are super important. But if there was one thing that you take from them, perhaps an example or two, what do you think those critical things would be?
Your question makes me directly think of the German municipal utilities. You know, we have the regional over regional utilities. They're mainly working on the national level or nearly on the national level. And then we have in the cities, we have the municipal utilities. They are also utilities, yeah, but they're covering the city or the town or a little region or something like that. And these companies are smaller, certainly significantly smaller. Do not run these huge coal blocks and nuclear blocks. They're rather distributors of the power generated. But they have also entered more and more now renewable energy capacities. historically, they also had a lot of hydro. And to answer your question, these companies, these municipal companies, they are betting on their regional turf. I think that's how you can say it in English. They are betting on their regional identity. They are local actors. There is also this thing, you know, of local economic dynamics, keeping the money in the region, these types of things, kind of a regional patriotism. So to answer your question, the municipal utilities, they dramatized their regional belonging and they dramatized the close relationship to the people in their region. So it was really made at home. You know what I mean? This local regional identification, in contrast to nuclear or oil burning power plants that take their primary resources in Saudi Arabia, in Russia, in Canada, wherever, you know. So the small things, the regionality, that was something I think was very important for these state, for these municipal utilities to survive and to thrive. And these municipalities also forced a lot the cooperation with green energy actors in the local regional environment. There was more collaboration.
Olivia, this has been such a fascinating discussion. I wish we had a full more hour to kind of to unpack the rest of it. And we might, in fact, and I can see it kind of inviting you back onto our podcast to pick up this conversation. We've covered so much of the past hour. It's been an absolute pleasure. And thank you for your many insights. You know, I feel coming out of this discussion more optimistic about what can be and where utilities and other players could play more meaningfully, more productively in the transition. So thank you very much for that.
Yeah, thank you so much also for your warm words. And you know, there is absolute reason to be optimistic because in fact, the solar energy transition, I see it since 30 years. I mean, nowadays it's just like really taking the planet altogether. I'm not saying that everything will be solar. We need a lot of different energy vectors to really serve all the demand and all the needs. But I think that's the solar energy transition is one of the most positive developments we have seen in the last 20 years. Internationally. That's really, I think it's giving hope.
Thank you, Olivia. Really appreciate your time. And to our listeners, this episode will go live over the next few weeks on our podcast channel. Please find us on all major platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many, many others. We'll publish more details on our LinkedIn as well as on our website. I hope you're listening and find this valuable. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Join us next time for more business news, views, and insights from across the globe.